We've been talking about integration in Christian counseling. And we talked a couple of lectures before about history, the history of counseling. And now we're going to kind of pick that up again after we've looked at some of the issues. I explained how in the early days of Christian counseling, there was a real struggle to figure out how to handle secular psychology in light of what the Bible teaches. Well, in the 1970s, there was a lot of activity on this in Christian circles. Christian psychologists, counselors, pastors, they tried to clarify what could they properly take from secular psychology, if anything. And were there things that they couldn't? For the very first time, almost the first time, there were books on Christian bookshelves about psychology and about how our minds and our emotions work. That was very unusual. It's hard for us to imagine today that those things didn't exist, but they were very rare. There were voices for integration that emerged with different levels of understanding. They weren't all exactly the same, but we've mentioned several times Gary Collins. A huge name in America, and I think in other places, was James Dobson. Tim LaHaye, who later became famous for stories, also wrote about Christian psychology, the Naramores, and an author named H. Norman Wright, who wrote many books for ordinary pastors and Christians on various psychological issues, everything from premarital counseling to dealing with autistic children. But there was this reaction as well that persisted, and people started writing on that and opening up that idea. More writers give different voices. Some are less emphasizing one thing more than another and so forth. Let me talk to you about some of these figures because they were so prominent. I want to talk about James Dobson. James Dobson became probably the most famous Christian psychologist in America. He is a son of a long line of pastors, but he didn't come to prominence through his pastoral background. He came to prominence through his psychology. He has a PhD in psychology, and he was a staff psychologist in California in a hospital. In the 70s, he published a little book for parents called Dare to Discipline. It wasn't a book about spanking your children and such. It was just a book of good, solid guidelines on how parents should handle children with different temperaments. That book sold more than 2 million copies in the next 20 years. He began to rise to prominence rather quickly, and he made a series of films, this is before video, of him in an audience interacting with people about questions they had about raising families. These films, which eventually were put into video, were hugely popular. I'm not sure there was a city or town in America that didn't show these. They were gently Christian, you might say, so that they were welcome in schools, in public meetings. You could invite people to your church to see Dr. Dobson talk about the family, about marriage, and so forth. There was nothing like it. I'd never seen anything like it before. Then he started writing books on parenting, on marriage, on how men, what men are like and what women are like. He authored or co-authored 36 books. His radio program, Focus on the Family, became a worldwide phenomenon. It was eventually on over 7,000 stations around the world. Reportedly, it was heard every day by something like 220 million people in 164 countries. I don't think I knew there were 164 countries. Later, he became a national spokesman in America on very conservative social issues, political issues and such. And in some cases today, people who know his name only know him as sort of a political commentator for conservative issues. He retired from Focus on the Family in 2003 and has had a much lower profile since then. But he was a psychologist, and almost every church, church had people who had read his books about these issues of the family, marriage, and so forth. Another very prominent, though not as famous, that some of you have read was the author Larry Crabb. Larry Crabb was a very good bridge kind of person between the biblical counseling movement and the Christian counseling movement. He also has a PhD in clinical psychology. He concentrated primarily in writing on giving counseling skills to lay and pastoral level counselors. He offered easily digested, easy to understand models. He helped people understand how Bible fit with personalities and so forth. He could speak about sin. He could speak about the love of Christ. He could speak about doubt, practical obedience, and so forth. He's an excellent writer. People found him easy to read. But he was also speaking as a psychologist, bringing his insights into Christian teaching. He would write on some occasions about anxiety, irritability, mild depression, but also major problems like eating disorders, marital breakdowns, sexual perversions, and recovery from abuse. So he was widely read, wrote on a lot of things, and helped a lot of Christians who weren't academic to understand how to think about these things. Well, in the 1980s, as things moved on, more and more books and videos and speakers and seminars dealt with this, with these subjects that related to Christians and some realm of psychology. There were many who were integrationists, who were drawing something that they had learned, say, from a 12-step program in addiction recovery, and laying that in on top of their Christian understanding. And these things were people tried to bring some of these things together. The books, if you went into any bookstore, at least in America, there were racks of books that dealt with all kinds of emotional, social subjects. And associations of counselors were formed. So these professionals would get together, they would write things that each other could critique. They would grow in their understanding. They would try to move forward on these subjects. But there was always this pushback from some groups. Addiction things, for example. Is that an illness or is it just sin? There was a time where the word humanism was very big, and it was the great warning in the church, beware of humanism, meaning thinking as humans do, not as God does. And that was brought into suspicion of Christian counseling or psychology because some folks thought that this humanism was infecting us so that we weren't trusting the sufficiency of Scripture. And there were just charges of false religion in these Christian counseling worlds. People said, that's just a psycho-heresy. It's a psychological heresy. So there was tension. Still is, for that matter.
Have you benefited from our teaching ministry? Have you found TVS videos helpful and relevant? Please consider supporting us with your prayers and financial gifts. For more information, visit tvsseminary.com.
I want to read something, some sections. I have a great pastor friend, one of my former interns, who is an advocate of biblical counseling. And he has helped me. We've talked a number of times about this so that I could understand his frame of reference. He said, he's written me some things. I'll share some of what he wrote, and this is how we'll sort of wrap up this section. He said to me, first, the idea of biblical counseling as only being nouthetic counseling. Remember that word? Nouthetic means admonish, taken from the scripture that says admonish the idle. It's what J. Adams called his counseling, nouthetic. It's kind of an in-your-face, stop-it kind of counseling. He said the idea of biblical counseling as nouthetic counseling only is problematic. He said other writers have noticed this. He said, I don't know that J. Adams ever really understood it, but other people who followed him have. Even in the passage where that is taken from, it's evident that nouthetic counseling alone isn't adequate. Here's what 1 Thessalonians 5:14 says. This is where this comes from. The first word is noutheteo, nouthetic. Admonish the idle. Encourage the faint-hearted. Encourage is a word that suggests bringing grace. Help the weak. Be patient with them all. We don't admonish the faint-hearted or the weak. We encourage them or we help them. If we nouthetēo them, admonish them, we're liable to crush them. Jesus was gentle with the bruised reeds and the smoldering flax. Remember that phrase in Isaiah? We need to be that too. On the other hand, you know what it's like, he says, in a local church. Some people are just very hard-headed. And the only way to get through to them is to sort of get in their face and admonish them, challenge them. That's the only way they'll hear. He says, well, then that's what you need to do. You need to be very direct, blunt. But 1 Thessalonians 5:14, this verse, is nuanced, isn't it? It's not one size fits everybody. Paul knew this, and so do later followers of J. Adams. He says, I'm not sure that Adams appreciates that distinction, but his followers, many of them do. Second, he says, the last phrase in 1 Thessalonians 5:14 is huge. Be patient with them all. Even the idle and the unruly who need admonishment, still be patient with them all, especially the faint-hearted and the weak. The reason I think this is important is that it rules out, in most cases, the one-and-done approach. J. Adams liked the idea that you go one time, the pastor tells you what the deal is, and that's that. He says, that doesn't really work very well when you are trying to encourage people most of the time. Now, let me just say, I would say most of my counseling is a one-session thing because people simply come for one simple idea. We talk about it, it's sufficient, and they go on their way. So I'm not suggesting that pastoral counseling has to always be lots of times. But if the problem is stubborn, if the need is great, it certainly can take more time than that. We need to suffer long with folks, my friend says. Soul care is long-suffering work. As Horatius Bonar once said, God's trees grow slowly. Well, I believe that, he said. Paul, too, patient with them all, might look like multiple sessions over a season or two. Ultimately, this is a call to be forgiving and forbearing with one another over a lifetime in a local church. Evangelicalism, the school of Christianity that I am associated with, and many of you are, is often thought of by others as being short and shallow. He says, I think Christ is calling us to go deep and hang in a long time with folks. Change happens so slowly much of the time.